Now, I have this feeling for you as a church that you're entering a season of incredible acceleration. And I got to look around the new building this afternoon. I was so excited by that. Man, there's a lot of glass in that building. Man, tons of land. I'm so, and you've got your own lagoon and everything. It's practically palatial. And, you know, there are many signs, that being one of them, that as a church, God has got you on a track of real acceleration and advance. And that he is perhaps really freshly envisaging you for your mission as a people. And one of the chief issues that Jesus wants to deal with as he sets us on mission is the issue of fear in our lives. Because fear is so often such a debilitating force in our hearts and minds. It can stop us from doing so much, including being on mission with Jesus and doing what he's called us to do. Fear, I know in my own life, is often the battle I have to fight tooth and nail to make sure it doesn't get the better of me, but I stay in a place of faith and responding to Jesus. And so tonight, what I want to look at is one way in which Jesus deals with this issue of fear with his disciples, with his team of men, and how he begins to draw these fears out and then his answer for those fears. And Jesus in this story is getting his team of guys ready for their mission to go into all the world and preach the gospel. So we're going to read this story together and we'll start from verse 22. One day, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let's go over to the other side of the lake." So they got into the boat and set out. Now we'll just put the finger on the pause button just for a moment there. Simply to say this, Christianity is actually not as complicated as we sometimes make out. And the example of Jesus' disciples here is a very salient one for all of us. Jesus told them to get into the boat, and so they got into the boat. I mean, it's not rocket science, is it? And yet sometimes we can make following Christ so complicated because of all the nuances we put on it, when actually the issue at the end of the day is that what he says, we respond to. We follow him. And the thing is, for the disciples, their obedience to Jesus' words was not some kind of slavish obedience. It was the obedience of incredible affection and love for the person of Jesus. They obeyed him because they loved him. And we know, don't we, that the disciples actually had left everything already to follow Jesus. They'd left their nets, they'd left their livelihoods, they'd left their means of living just to be with him. They saw something in Jesus that was so magnetic, so attractive, so captivating. They left everything in their life to just be with him. And so when Jesus says, "Come on, guys, get in the boat with me," they're like, "Yes, Lord, we'll get in the boat with you. If that's what you're saying, then we're going to respond." And Jesus says, actually, in John 14, verse 15, he says, "If you love me, you will obey what I command." Now, those are two very interesting concepts, aren't they? If you love me, you'll obey me. We don't often, I think, in our culture, associate those two concepts with one another. If we love, then we'll obey. And yet, for Jesus, he says, if you love me, you'll obey what I command you. And the reason that we can do this is simply out of our relationship of love to Christ. Because we love him. Because we trust him. Because we worship him. Because we have revelation that he is not just God, but he is Father. That means that we can obey him. It's the obedience of love. We respond to him because of who he is. And here's the thing. I think often as Christians, we want to understand everything sometimes before we'll obey. Notice here that Jesus doesn't say to his guys, "Get in the boat. We're about to go on a mission trip to the Gadarenes." He says, "Guys, get in the boat." They don't really particularly get any more details than that. And here's the thing, particularly I think in the West, we so value understanding every bit of the equation before we say yes, that often we miss an adventure with Jesus because we're so blooming cautious. And actually, we're so blooming afraid. And actually, the real issue is perhaps there is a gap in our relationship to Christ. Because Jesus says, if you love me, you'll obey me. We obey because we're in love with a person, the person of God. And you need to understand this, that God is not required to explain everything to you. If you live your Christian life in a way that requires God to explain every single thing to you, then I tell you, you will live a very disappointing Christian life. Because he is not required to explain every detail to you. Some things he wants you just to take on trust. And you see, God is committed to getting you to live in such a way that he is not some kind of external contract that we relate to, but rather he is an eternal father. And so often we want all the details of the contract to say yes. Well, I tell you, God is committed to getting you to work out of trust as a son to a father. So he doesn't always explain the details to you, and certainly for the disciples, he doesn't really give them many details of the trip they're about to go on. And I think perhaps if he had, they may not have said yes. Because here's what happens next. Verse 23. As they sailed, Jesus fell asleep. A squall came down on the lake so that the boat was being swamped, and they were in great danger. The disciples went and woke him, saying, "Master, Master, we're going to drown." He got up and rebuked the wind and the raging waters. The storm subsided and all was calm. "Where is your faith?" he asked his disciples. In fear and amazement, they asked one another, "Who is this? He commands even the winds and the water, and they obey him." You know, one of the means that Jesus often uses to deal with the issue of fear in our lives is a storm. Now, I wonder if ever you've been in a situation where you felt like you said yes to Jesus, and then you immediately found yourself in a storm. Anyone ever felt like that? Everyone ever felt like you said, "Yes, Jesus, I'm going to follow you to the ends of the earth." And then the next morning, you know, the roof caves in or something of the equivalent. This has happened so many times in my life. It's almost funny now. I mean, I just remember one moment I was at a Christian conference, and there was an appeal for us to give generously to a particular cause. I forget what it was now, to be honest. But I remember in a kind of wave of excitement and enthusiasm and faith, I decided that I would give a whole month's wages. So I whacked the checkbook out, wrote the check in a kind of wave of enthusiasm, and, "God, I'm going to obey you and give you everything." And, you know, danced my way to the front and, you know, put the money in the bucket and did the jig back to my seat and all of that kind of stuff. You know, and the meeting finished and I felt quite good about what I'd done, really. And then the next week came and it dawned on me what I'd done. Oh, my word, what have I done? I've given a whole month's wages that I couldn't really afford to give. And, you know, how am I going to get through the month? And, you know, it was one of those occasions where I felt sure that any one of those mornings of that following week, a magical envelope was going to come through the letterbox with a check for, you know, exactly the right amount to pay the bills for that week. And guess what? It never came. I'm still waiting. If any of you want to write me a check tonight, that's fine. No, I'm joking. But have you ever felt like that? You said yes to Jesus, and then you suddenly found yourself in a storm. You found yourself wondering, well, what's that all about then? I just obeyed Jesus. Surely I get some kind of blessing for that. And yet I'm finding myself in a storm. Have you ever wondered where Jesus is in the storm? You ever wondered where he's gone? You know, maybe for some of you, maybe in the past you feel like you've given God a go. Maybe you feel like you've actually, you know, you've given him a chance, you've done the Christian thing, but actually maybe a storm hit, some difficulty, and you wondered where Jesus had disappeared to. You wondered where he was. Well, where is Jesus? Well, in this story, we find that Jesus is right in the boat. He's in the boat with the disciples, and he is asleep. And again, maybe for some of us, we know theologically, well, I know that God's with me, but he feels like he's asleep on the job. Surely he should be doing something. Ever felt like that? Well, listen, here's the reality about Jesus. Jesus is asleep, not because he doesn't care, but because he's completely at peace. Jesus can sleep in the middle of a storm because he's completely at peace about the outcome. You know this wonderful thing about God? God never gets anxious. He never gets anxious about anything. He's never worried about the outcome. He's never worried about the end of the story. He's never wondering, how's this going to work out? How am I going to get through this one? No, Jesus is asleep, not because he doesn't care or because he's complacent, but because he's completely at peace. And that makes all the difference in the world to us. Jesus is at peace. And we need to understand this, that storms and sicknesses and sin and poverty and all these things, that these things don't originate from God. Sin does not originate from God because he is not sinful. Sickness does not originate in God because God isn't sick. Anxiety doesn't originate from God because God is not anxious. Lack of peace does not originate from God because he is completely at peace. He is completely good 100% of the time. 1 John 1:5 says this, "This is the message we have heard from him and declare to you. God is light, and in him there is no darkness at all." That is a verse you can write on your fridge in very big letters. God is light. In him there is no darkness at all. Have you ever wondered if there's a tiny corner of God that's a bit dark or got it in for you? No. He's light. In him there's no darkness at all. And Jesus can sleep because all he has, all he possesses as the God-man Jesus is peace. And that's the realm that he is living in. You see, we can only give to others what we ourselves possess. I would love to walk around this room tonight and get out my wallet, if I had it with me, and give you all £10,000. I'd love just to go down every row and just hand out £10,000 to every single one of you. There's one snag about that. Though I might desire that, I don't possess it. Okay, I do not actually have it to give you. The check would bounce. And for Jesus, he gives what he possesses to give, which is peace. So he sleeps in the midst of the storm. And here's the thing. One of the chief goods that Jesus works in the storms of our life is freedom from fear. Because storms particularly serve to reveal to us if there is any root of fear in our life. And here's how this works. Firstly, a storm will reveal to you what you're really putting your faith in. Yeah? A storm will reveal to you what you're really putting your faith in. And that's why Jesus says, after he's calmed the storm, where is your faith? And the answer to that was their faith was in the sides of the jolly waves that were about to come over the boat. That's where their faith was. And so Jesus says, listen, where is your faith? And this is what storms do. They reveal, they bring to the surface where our trust really lies. And, you know, I do read this story with an element of kind of understanding of the disciples' reaction. I mean, after all, these guys are not landlubbers, they're not wimps, they're not puny kind of men who've never been to sea before. These are guys who've grown up hardened fishermen. They know this particular lake like the back of their hand. These guys know how to sail a boat. They know how to handle the seas. And they know that this particular storm is a killer. And that is exactly why they're petrified. They're scared because they know this storm could end their life. They know that full well. They've been in many storms and they recognize that this one is one of such magnitude that they are surely going to die. I look at that and I think, I can understand them being scared. I certainly would be wetting myself in that particular moment. And yet, Jesus says to them, where is your faith? And if you read Matthew's account of this same story, he's even stronger to them. He says, where is your faith? Why are you so afraid? Why are you so afraid? It's an amazing question. And here's the thing. If you let them, storms will reveal to you the condition of your heart. And this is actually one of Jesus' strategies for bringing a root of fear to the surface so that he can deal with it. And in this moment of going through a storm, Jesus is revealing to his disciples an issue of fear in their life that he wants to deal with fairly and squarely. And the way this works is this, is that when everything is going well in your life and mine, it's actually very easy to live life free from fear. You know, when I can pay the bills and the car's working okay and, you know, the heating's working okay in the winter and the kids are healthy and I've got my holiday booked for July, you know, I'm going to Spain, going somewhere nice and warm. You know, when all those kind of conditions in life line up, it's actually, we can kind of kid ourselves, well, I'm free from fear. No fear in my life. Everything's going very well, thank you very much. But all it takes sometimes is for the jolly car to break down in the morning and suddenly, pop, there comes some fear. Yeah? All it can take is for one of your children suddenly to get an unknown sickness and suddenly, pop, there's some fear. And interestingly, in the history of the church, this is why I think that the church historically does very well in times of great persecution, but does not do so well in times of great healthiness and plenty. Historically, if you look at the history of revival and the history of the church, you will find that the church that is persecuted and undergoing a great amount of suffering and trial and challenge is often the church that is most thriving. Why? Because they're a church that's trusting in Jesus. Yet when everything is just going well, we've got everything we need, sometimes subtly we can slip into living life that doesn't trust in Jesus. And so storms can reveal to us fears that exist on the inside that sometimes we wouldn't know exist unless we were in a storm. I wonder for some of you tonight whether you are currently in a storm. And I wonder what that is revealing to you about the state of your heart. Is that teaching you a lesson about where your faith is? If Jesus came to you and I and said, where is your faith? Why are you so afraid? That is a searching question to each and every one of us. Where is your faith? Why are you so afraid? Here's the second thing that storms do. Storms are an invitation to heavenly encounter. Storms are an invitation to heavenly encounter. Again, the amazing thing about Jesus, Romans 8:28 says this, that Jesus works all things together for the good of those who are called. Meaning simply that Jesus can win with whatever hand he's dealt. And so storms, though Jesus doesn't cause storms, he doesn't cause things like sicknesses and those kind of challenges in life, Jesus is so good that he can take a storm and use it for win. He needs it for a win in your life. And storms are an invitation to heavenly encounter. Jesus is asleep because he has something to give. And in this moment, as the storm hits, the disciples suddenly see Jesus kick into another gear altogether where he speaks to the winds and the waves and says, be still. And in fear and amazement, they say, who is this? There's a moment of heavenly encounter in the midst of the storm. Amazing. And you know, Jesus is very, very committed to getting us to live in a place where we are dependent on receiving heaven's resources for our life, and particularly in moments of challenge. And you know, the truth is often in moments of greatest challenge, where resurrection power is released. You know, we all love to quote Psalm 23, don't we? That wonderful psalm, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not be in want." But do you remember one of those lines in that particular psalm? Where is it that Jesus lays the table that we feed from? In whose presence is it that we eat from the table? In the presence of our enemies. Isn't that interesting? Where is it that we feel the comfort of the shepherd's rod and staff? In the valley of the shadow of death. See, here's the truth. It's often in our moments of greatest challenge and storm that there is an invitation to heavenly encounter. And it's often through suffering that resurrection power is revealed. That's why Paul in 2 Corinthians 1, when he writes to the Corinthian church, he says in 2 Corinthians 1 verse 8, "Brothers, we do not want you to be uninformed about the hardships we suffered in the province of Asia." It says, "We suffered far beyond our ability to endure, so that we despaired of life itself. Indeed, in our hearts we felt the sentence of death." And then the very next line he says, "But this happened that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead." What's he saying? He's saying, listen, in great challenge and storminess, those are moments where we encounter God in a new way. Those are invitations for heavenly encounter. And Jesus is teaching his disciples this in this moment of storminess. In storminess, they have a fresh moment of revelation and encounter with Jesus. So storms do a couple of things. Firstly, they reveal to you if there are any fear issues in your life. Secondly, they are an invitation to heavenly encounter, because resurrection power flows where there is suffering. And here is what happens next in the story. Verse 25. "In fear and amazement, they asked one another, 'Who is this? He commands even the winds and the water, and they obey him.'" So additionally here, we find that Jesus deals with the disciples' fear by giving them a massive fresh revelation of who he is. They saw something of Jesus in this moment that they'd never seen before. "Who is this? We thought we knew this guy, but now we see him in a completely new light. Who is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him." How does Jesus deal with your fear? He deals with it by bringing you face to face with himself in a fresh revelation of who he really is. He deals with your fear by bringing you to himself. The answer for every fear is found in the face of Christ. And this is what happens in this moment. And suddenly we see this amazing shift going on in the disciples. Formerly, where they'd been afraid of the winds and the waves, suddenly their fear does this transfer. In fear and amazement, they said, "Who is this?" Do you see that moment of transfer? Who is this? Even in the storms, even the water, the wind, the waves, even they obey the voice of this man. Who is this? It's Jesus. Jesus. And this is the way it often works as you read Scripture. You find that in moments of great need, God will reveal himself in fresh ways. I mean, do you remember, for example, the story of Joshua? Joshua was the commander of the armies of Israel after Moses. He was the leader of the people of God. And his first task was to go into a city whose walls, he described, went from the earth all the way up to heaven. It was called Jericho. And Jericho, we read, was tightly shut up. And Joshua is in this position of thinking, how in the heck am I going to get over that wall? How am I going to get in? God, you're going to have to do something. And we find in that moment of desperation where Joshua knows his commission and yet feels inadequate to perform it, suddenly God shows up. We read the commander of the armies of the Lord suddenly appears to Joshua. Joshua takes off his sandals, falls on his face before this one who's appeared. It's Jesus. It's Jesus. Jesus deals with our fear by giving us a fresh revelation of who he is. And this is exactly what's happening in this moment with the disciples. Again, for some of you who maybe are locked up in fear, or maybe are in a storm, maybe you're facing a Jericho wall that seems too big for you to overcome. Let me tell you, your answer is Jesus. Your answer is Jesus. You know, Paul, when he prays for the Ephesians in Ephesians 1:17, he says, I pray that you would have a spirit of wisdom and revelation to know him better. Do you know that that's your greatest need? It doesn't really matter if you've been a Christian 60 years or 6 minutes. Your answer is Jesus. Your answer is him. A revelation of who he really is. You see, if you and I could really see Jesus as he really is, it would change everything. It would change absolutely everything. And I pray for you, I pray for myself, that Jesus would give us a spirit of wisdom and revelation, that we could know him better, know him more, know him as he really is, so that like the disciples, we could say, who is this? Who is this? I mean, even as we were singing tonight, oh, he loves us. Oh, how he loves us. If we really knew who Jesus was in a fresh way, we'd be able to sing that with even fresh wonder. He loves us. He loves us. Jesus, this one whom the wind and the waves obey. So Jesus, through your storm, will reveal where your fears are. He gives you an invitation to heavenly encounter. He chooses to reveal who he is to you to deal with your fear. And then the disciples finally, I imagine with a gasp of relief, land on terra firma. And here's what we read in verse 26. They sail to the region of the Gerasenes, which is across the lake from Galilee. I can just imagine that moment, you know, just, oh, land! Finally, land! I would, you know, be kissing the sand and, you know, making some breakfast and just hanging out for a while, kind of catching your breath. Well, here's what happens immediately as they step ashore. When Jesus stepped ashore, he was met by a demon-possessed man from the town. For a long time, this man had not worn any clothes or lived in a house, but had lived in the tombs. That's with the dead people. When he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell at his feet, shouting at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, don't torture me." The disciples unwittingly have gone through a storm and an experience of their fear being dealt with so that they are equipped for this moment, so that they are equipped for the mission that Jesus has for them. What they've just been through, what they've just learned, what they've just seen of Jesus in Revelation has equipped them to deal with this moment. And I'm sure that emotionally this was the last thing in the world that they really wanted. They've just been through a storm that's nearly killed them. They've got this revelation of Jesus that's kind of really made them terrified. And they land on the shore to be met by the demon-possessed naked guy who lives among the dead, you know, kind of bounding up to them. It's probably the last thing in the world that they really wanted to see in that particular moment. And yet, Jesus, I can almost imagine Jesus just kind of chuckling under the surface. You know, as his disciples squirmed and thinking, oh no, Jesus, can you deal with this one, please? And yet the truth is, they have been equipped for this moment. Their encounter just minutes before has given them exactly what they need to succeed in this moment and to bring relief to a man who is bound up so terribly. And you know, here is the truth, that often it's what you learn in the stormy seasons of your life and what you learn when Jesus deals with your fears that equips you to be very fruitful in mission. And I would hazard a guess that the lessons that you've learned in this last 12 months about God are probably exactly the lessons you need to know for what you're doing right now in this moment and what you're going to do tomorrow morning. God always gets you ready for what he calls you to do. You know, I'm just thinking about this massive building that you're buying. You know, and huge sums of money that are needed. Guess what? Jesus has equipped you to tackle that mission with great success. He's given you everything you need. Perhaps even when you look back this last 12 months as a church, you'll find all the lessons that you need for this season that you're currently in. Because Jesus gets us ready. Jesus gets us ready for the commissions that he gives to us. And of course, the story goes on. We'll not read it all now, but Jesus, of course, deals wonderfully with this man. And he sets him free. And he sets him free so much that we read that this man was, by the time the other villagers came, this man was clothed and in his right mind, sitting at the feet of Jesus. Ah, just amazing. And you see, just as Jesus is able to bring peace to a storm in a lake, he is able to bring peace to a storm in a man's mind and a man's heart and a man's life. A man whom others had given up for dead. They'd left him. They had no hope for this man. And yet Jesus, with a word, can bring peace to a man who's so troubled and faced such storms and trials in his life. Again, you need to know this, that if you are here and really, honestly, in your heart and your mind, you feel like I am just one big storm all the time on the inside. My mind is jumbled. I never have any peace. I find it hard to sleep. I get so anxious. I feel oppressed. I feel afflicted. I feel pressured, hemmed in. Listen, Jesus has a word that can calm the storm of your heart. And even tonight, I feel like Jesus just wants to come and put his finger on some of your lives tonight and begin that process of restoration and freedom from fears that sometimes dominate your life so much. You know, Jesus wants us to hate fear when we find it in our lives. We're not meant just to live with it. You're not meant to just live with fear. And so often I think we can just tolerate fear because we've learned to live with it for so many years. And, you know, Jesus doesn't tolerate fear. He comes to remove it from our lives. And if he has to use a storm to reveal it to you, then he will. Because he wants to deal with fear and instead place in your heart a faith and a connection to him that brings life. And in a few moments, we're going to pray for that for some of you.